You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
On this special edition of Earning It.
I never meant to cause you any sorrow.
That ring was the best thing that ever happened to him. It was like he's magic.
Never meant to cause you any pain.
We take you inside the greatest show on earth. The Super Bowl Halftime Show. Hello, and welcome back to Earning It. I'm Sam Rappaport. For those of you who haven't listened to our earlier episodes, this show is about a pipeline I helped create within the NFL to bring more women into the game, both on and off the field. I'm a former professional quarterback and work at the league. My producer, Jane Skinner Goodell, is an NFL superfan and veteran journalist. She actually dreamed up the show and pitched me as the host.
We should also point out, Sam, that I'm married to the commissioner, so I am the lucky one to have seen a whole lot of halftime shows in person. I pitched you because I think you have the perfect voice to tell this story. First, you know football like nobody's business. I've seen you beat Roger Goodell on a football field. Second, you're responsible for so many women that we're seeing in the NFL today, on the field, in the front office. And third, and this is probably the most important of all for me, when I told you that I was going to pitch you as the host, you immediately said, can I swear?
What an incredible season. I had more pinch me moments than I can explain, and I'm not sure my feet touched the ground during any of these interviews. You know, we spoke to NFL head coaches, owners, the commissioner, who I cursed at, whoops, and he cried on the episode. That certainly stood out to me. You know, and icons like Billie Jean King, who I've looked up to since I was a kid. And so just how the NFL season ends with a big bang, Jane and I wanted to finish our first season with a bang. And the cool thing is, you don't even need to like football to be into this one. I'm talking about the Super Bowl halftime show.
It's a very, very big deal. It's a big deal for the NFL. It's a big deal for music. It's a huge deal for television. I mean, each year, it's the most watched 12 minutes on TV. Can you imagine putting on basically a concert in 12 minutes? They have to put up that set, break down that set, and make sure everything goes flawlessly, not just for people in the stadium, but really more so for people on television. So the hype for this game is so incredible. And to understand what goes into making that 12 minutes of TV is pretty mind-boggling. There is a woman behind that. She's so smart and she is so chill. I think she has to be to have that role to make everything go so perfectly. So I knew about Dion Harmon. I had to find a way to get to her. So I went through a friend of a friend of a friend. She was so nice. She got on a call with me and I said, I kind of have this idea. We don't want to blow any surprises, but could you kind of take us behind the scenes? What goes into your thinking when you're creating the halftime show, particularly for Super Bowl 56? She's got five performers. That's a lot, and there's a lot of pressure on her. And I said, I'd also love to know how much history you take into account when you're planning a show, when you're looking at the creative. And she said, a lot. And I said, okay, that leads me to my next question. I'm thinking we could bring along someone who could act as a halftime historian. And I have an idea. I think Questlove is the perfect person for that. He is such a student of history. He's a musical genius. I know he goes to the Super Bowls. Wouldn't that be fun to have the two of you do it together? And she said, oh, I'll text him.
If you don't know Questlove, he's the co-founder of The Roots, now the house band for The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. He directs movies like Summer of Soul. He's been a professor. Basically, he's perfect for this assignment.
So Dion convinced Questlove to do it. He said, I normally don't do stuff like this, but she asked me and I'm into it. And there we have it.
Dion is a force. She's produced the Oscars, the Super Bowl Halftime Show, the American Music Awards, the BET Awards. She produced Kendrick Lamar's Coachella performance, which eventually became his world tour. She's also DJed professionally for years. which she says is a lot like producing.
It's the music. And again, it's creating a moment, an environment that, you know, people can just come and you're shaping this experience. So in a way, producing is the same thing visually as DJing is aurally.
She was responsible for the 2021 Super Bowl halftime show featuring The Weeknd, which she called the most nerve-wracking show of her life. Until, of course, this year.
This year we have Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, Mary J. Blige, Eminem, and Kendrick Lamar. And all of them are amazing and could headline this on their own. And the good thing is that we have worked with each of these artists for many years. So we're familiar with them and we're familiar with their teams. And one thing that I love about this process is that they are all working together. Like, there's no conflict or ego around any of this. I came into it like, oh my God, like, how are we going to deal with all of these people? But it's been really amazing, and they're all excited. They all want to make this the best thing, the best Super Bowl that there ever has been. And, you know, they're just coming together to make a moment.
Sam, I have to ask you, we're about to ask Dion and Questlove what their favorite shows are, what the most iconic shows are, what the most important halftime shows are. I've actually never asked you, what is your favorite Super Bowl halftime show?
I think my most memorable Super Bowl halftime show was the first Super Bowl I ever attended in 2004, when I could not believe I was in the stands of that game. And that was when Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake performed. And in the stands, we didn't know what happened, right? When he ripped that piece of clothing off her chest. And until I got home, you know, social media wasn't even burgeoning at that point. Until I got home, did I really know what happened? But I'm a big Beyonce fan, and Beyonce's show a couple years ago was one that I'll never forget.
Which of the Beyoncés did you like better? There's 2013, 2016.
2013. That was when the lights went out.
It's possession the 49ers have. Two plays into it.
Turn out
the lights
light.
Go out.
Somebody put a plug
and light a candle.
35-minute power outage.
I'll never forget that game. And I remember watching Beyonce and then Destiny's Child come out and thinking that that was the best and most entertaining Super Bowl halftime show that I had witnessed in person. It was mind-blowing. And as a Beyonce fan, to be breathing the same air as her in a stadium was a really cool experience.
Rich, that's what happens when Beyonce leaves the field.
Yeah, she took all the energy with her.
Jane, you've been to many Super Bowls. What's the one Super Bowl halftime show that sticks out for you?
The one that I actually rewatch about once a year on YouTube, and literally I get choked up every single time, is right after 9/11. It was the 2002 year with U2 playing.
America!
You know, it's for people who were too young at the time, it was just the strangest time in our country. People were still very nervous. There was a real, real strong sense of patriotism. But a gathering like the Super Bowl, people were particularly nervous. And we also had a band playing that wasn't American, so you didn't really know what's to come. I love U2, but I wasn't quite sure what they were going to do with it. They actually, I didn't even remember this at the time. They only played three songs, and they were just mesmerizing. And what they did at the end, when they had this ginormous screen and they scrolled the names of the victims of 9/11, and then Bono at the end opens his leather jacket and inside is an American flag. And it just reminded me of how powerful the halftime show is and what that platform is and the tribute that they paid to the victims. I just thought it was really, really the most gorgeous moment that I've seen at halftime.
Thank you.
There are so many incredible moments in Super Bowl history, culturally, musically. Our halftime historian says the most important one came in 1993.
I think Michael Jackson upped the production ante. I think before 1993, the Super Bowl halftime show was for most people just a break to sort of do re-up on refreshments and bathroom breaks. But since 1993, the Super Bowl halftime show, I think, has almost become the epicenter and almost a guarantee of what draws in non-sports people to watch the Super Bowl.
Today's halftime shows are star-studded, but it wasn't always that way. For decades, they were similar to something you'd see at a college football game. Marching bands, kids with the music nonprofit Up With People, maybe the occasional music celebrity, Duke Ellington or Chubby Checker. Dion, was that a turning point, 1993, in your mind? Like, what did MJ's show mean to you, and what did that do to the Super Bowl halftime show?
I mean, I feel like every show just establishes kind of a new, a better or a different bar, right? So for him, I just remember like the magic of him popping up on all of these Jumbotrons and then popping up on the stage. I mean, no one had seen something like that, like live on TV. And then even when they took all of the paper, which it's also funny to think about how that's changed to like LED now, but when everybody held up their paper and made like all the kids around the whole stadium for Heal the World. Yeah. I mean, it just became like, what are the big theatrical things that we can do now?
Like Diana Ross, who performed for the 30th anniversary of the Super Bowl in 1996 and had a chopper lift her out of the stadium.
I mean, Diana with her helicopter, which people are still asking for helicopters. Mm-hmm. We get no's, but they're like, she did it. You know, so people are like, how do we get dropped in? How do we get lifted out? Like, can a drone bring me in? There are all these things. And Prince, I don't think anyone will ever be able to up Prince for the simple fact that it started raining during Purple Rain.
Only wanna see you. In the purple rain.
I mean, God participated in his performance. I mean, that was, it's like, I watch it to this day. It like brings me to tears, like the big curtain and his shadow and the rain and the music.
The production value of these shows is incredible. It has to be. For a lot of artists, even huge names like Prince, it's their best shot to appeal to a broader audience of fans. I heard a story from our commissioner, Roger Goodell, about Bruce Springsteen when he was rehearsing and he was about to go on stage. And he told Roger, like, I'm really nervous for this. And he usually isn't nervous. So Questlove, Dion, what is it about the Super Bowl halftime show in particular that makes artists anxious compared to their normal sets and concerts?
You know, an artist like Springsteen, is actually, even though he's an A-list artist, Springsteen, and the same can also be said for Prince, they are cult artists. They're cult artists with millions of cult followers. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's not like Springsteen is so much in the mainstream that he's easily, like a person like Michael Jackson sort of falls into that realm where you're so ubiquitous that you're kind of like bread or water or oxygen. Whereas, you know, with both Prince and Springsteen, they're niche artists. So it's like Springsteen fans come in the millions to support him. And it's not necessarily guaranteed that their brand will easily resonate with whom we think is watching the halftime. Of course, it's silly because basically all of America is watching. But, you know, that's also it's easy for Bruce to be relaxed in at his own concerts because he knows that everyone is there specifically has emotional investment in Bruce Springsteen. Whereas now he's sort of being put in a vulnerable position where he has to prove that he has the goods.
That's an interesting perspective because Abel, the weekend, he was nervous too. And I think it was our last rehearsal before show, which crazy is 3 days before the show. It happens on Friday and you don't do it again until Sunday at halftime. So we're in that last pass and, you know, we get through it and it's really good. And we're just kind of standing there looking out. And he's like, this is crazy. He was like, this is crazy. I don't know how people get out here and do this every week, like as an athlete. But as a, he was just like, it's a trip. And what you said, Questlove, about, you know, The Weeknd is not a super mainstream artist. He's a big star, but he's specific. So the thought of 120 million people, not people who came to see you, but just people who are watching to either cheer you on or look for something that you messed up on, is gotta be a crazy experience. And it's fully live, which comes with its own nervousness.
If you are the unicorn who didn't see The Weeknd's performance during the 2021 halftime show in Tampa, do yourself a favor and go watch it. There's a socially distanced choir, lots of dancers in COVID masks, and he moves around in this fun room type maze that you actually couldn't see if you were there in person. But it blew up online. Questlove called this show a paradigm shift.
I realized watching his performance live as a 50-year-old, you know, I was like, well, okay, this is interesting, this is whatever. But I realized that because we live in a place where social media is our epicenter, our life, Weeknd already won the Super Bowl, because out of that whole performance came a 3-second
the
gif,
meme and yes, of him in the room looking like, right
you see it all over it.
Yeah, when the smoke is cleared and it's 2563. That gif will still be here beyond his music, beyond, I don't know if we'll be using English, you know. You're laughing because I'm telling the truth.
You know, I will say that was definitely a different experience. I mean, all of this is primarily for TV. You want right. The people in the stadium to have a good experience, but ultimately you're playing to cameras.
We talked about what the halftime show might look like 10, even 20 years from now.
I fully expect by 2030, maybe the conversation of, like Whitney Houston's doing it right now in Vegas, where her hologram is about to perform and go on tour. So I wouldn't be at all shocked by 2030. Maybe the first hologram performance will be halftime show. You know, over in Japan, there are sort of like anime star, like celebrities that aren't
the
even
avatars, human. Right?
Yeah, avatars that are, you know, even real anymore. Like, I mean, there's space for that.
What about like the Oculus headset? So like, instead of watching it on TV, everybody's in their virtual world watching it. Ooh. Maybe you're on the stage, maybe you're on the field, like they're That could, yeah. I don't even see that as 2030. Yeah. Like, that could potentially be in the next 2 years, you know?
Dion and Questlove share a theory that in the past, production teams would go all in with one idea 1 year and then have to readjust based on content or budget. So the year after Michael Jackson performed, it was Travis Tritt, Tanya Tucker, Clint Black, and the Judds.
They double back. Like, it was almost like a pushback. Like, okay, enough of that. Enough of you guys coming to our world. We're going to keep it American football, so let's go country. And even the year after that, I think there was, I remember...
Patti LaBelle.
Yeah, and maybe that was based on, you know, ratings going down after halftime, that they realized, like, oh, we have to have somebody to sustain us. Because then, by that point, I remember, like, MTV, like, other shows saw the Living Color example. And then said, okay, come halftime, we're going to steal the Super Bowl crowd away and bring them to, and that's what was happening. So, yeah, I almost feel like the Diana Ross moment was the moment where the NFL realized that we came to play, well, and we have to
Michael's whole budget could have easily eaten up the budget for the following 2 years. So they might have had to catch up. And then they were able to.
Yeah. Worth it. So we can kind of categorize Super Bowl halftime shows as before Michael and Diana, after Michael and Diana. Then there are the shows that become iconic because they take place during a significant moment in time, like the one Jane talked about. U2.
See, I think maybe that was the first time I went to the Super Bowl. I remember I started going to all of them. I believe that was my very first one that I went to. So I definitely remember the feeling in the air. Like, you know, 2002 was post 9, like the 7 months after 9/11. It was a different feeling. You know, I'm not saying it was a kinder, gentler nation or whatever, but I definitely remember like wanting to stay to see what you two, like, okay, we know they're going to do something special for the tribute, for the memorial, all those things. And so, yeah, I remember that being a moment.
It was almost like an innocence lost, 9/11 was, because a lot of people hadn't dealt with acts of war, like World War, you know, certain generations, they remember World War II, World War I, whatever it was. And I think there were a lot of people that were like, wait a minute, you know, this were this kind of false sense of security and a nervousness about being in groups, being in places that could be targeted. There's a lot of security. So it was almost like raising the flag, no pun intended, but really just showing the resiliency, honoring the people who had been lost, showing that we can still do this big cultural thing in the country despite what just happened. Right. I think it was hopeful for people.
And then there are the shows that make headlines for, well, totally unexpected reasons, like Super Bowl 38. The Panthers are playing the Patriots. And the halftime show is stacked. MTV is producing, and some of the year's biggest names are there. Diddy, Nelly, Kid Rock, Jessica Simpson. You don't remember? Here's why. Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson were there too.
I think this is the first time that Diddy truly got up stage. You talk about the elements of the 8 minutes that came before, of the 7 minutes and 53 seconds before that moment in 2004.
Nobody, I forgot about him.
Like, Diddy actually got upstaged. We knew he was there. And not to mention, you know, all those hits. Like, Nelly was there doing Hot in Here. That 2004 was like the best of the early aughts. That was like the first, I remember that just being a mixtape, you know, a mixtape of groups that you wouldn't put together. Like Kid Rock in any other circumstance. I mean, as many times as I've sat next to him, like near the Grammys or whatever, and just look at his facial expressions at like, you know, the whoever the TRL darling of the moment was. So it's only in this very specific situation could you have like Jessica Simpson and Kid Rock and Timberlake and Nelly and Diddy.
We could devote a full episode or even a series to that show alone. Here are the broad strokes. The show kicks off with a video montage of celebrities encouraging viewers to vote in that year's presidential elections. Then Jessica Simpson appears with a marching band. Headliner Janet Jackson takes the stage, followed by Diddy, Nelly, and Kid Rock. Then Janet comes back to close out the show and is joined by Justin Timberlake for his hit Rock Your Body. Then, in the final seconds, this happens. Justin reaches over and rips Janet's top to reveal a pasty. Then all hell breaks loose, at least for those watching at home. And the producers of the show. That was my first Super Bowl in stadium. And I remember we didn't really know what just happened. We thought something happened. We just couldn't really tell.
You were there in the stadium?
Was there like a collective gasp?
We didn't really know. We saw something.
You didn't see it, right? It was a little tiny thing.
I don't think people in the stadium knew. It was a tiny thing. We saw a look of horror, but we didn't know if maybe, you know, that we didn't see any part of her body. Right. Or in my seats, I didn't see any part of her body, but we knew something happened. We just didn't know what, and social media wasn't a thing
back
then.
Wait.
So
right.
We couldn't go on Twitter and find out what happened. Yeah, exactly. It didn't take long. Both MTV and CBS apologized right away and said that they had no knowledge that the show would involve partial nudity. Janet and Justin did the same, calling it a wardrobe malfunction, and said the initial plan was to reveal a bra. there were FCC fines and lawsuits. Viacom, which owns CBS, ended up paying $3.5 million to settle indecency complaints. For Janet Jackson, it was especially devastating. She was banned from presenting at the Grammys that year and discouraged from attending. Justin Timberlake, though, was allowed to attend and present as long as he apologized during the show. Her subsequent album was blacklisted by Viacom subsidiaries, which include VH1, MTV, and Clear Channel, one of the largest radio broadcasters.
Really?
Yeah, I don't believe wardrobe malfunction.
Yeah, no. I mean, come on, dude. You know if there's a wardrobe malfunction. That was the right. Ripping. I mean, what you know. But it was really sad and discouraging to see how Janet was vilified in this. And it always confused me because I was like, she got the thing ripped off of. She didn't rip it off. Like, that's Thank what you. Frustrated me. It was like, he did it. If you want to blame somebody, blame the person who ripped the material, not the person whose right. material got ripped. And it's just like this culture right. of blaming women.
You know, I saw it as a showbiz moment. Okay. You know, controversy sells or whatever. However, we learned quickly that if a black woman does a stunt like that, then there's a price to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I for one, like my life wasn't ended with the showing of a nipple. I mean, to be honest with you, I missed it. Like, it wasn't like my eyes were glued to the TV. Like, what did I do? You know, I think I was in the kitchen and everyone started screaming like, oh my God, they didn't know what they saw. But as far as the outrage was concerned, I see it as fake outrage.
There is not a single thing that happens in that show that is not run by every single stakeholder in the Super Bowl world, from the NFL to Pepsi in our case, to whatever network it's on. Like, everybody literally gets a minute by minute of what you will see, who's going to do what they're wearing. Everything has to be approved in advance, well in advance. They're at the rehearsal. So you're saying, like, they would have had to completely never rehearse it, never talk about it, never anything.
You don't think that's possible too?
I do think that's possible, but I also think that is really, really, really risky for a lot of reasons. And if the producer said she felt betrayed, that would make me feel like some people were like, oh, do it, it'll be fine. And then when everybody was like, clutches pearls, they were like, point the finger, she did this. Like, that would make me be like, but you guys approved this.
Next up, Dion takes us inside this year's halftime show.
You know, I think they all feel a responsibility. Like, we are doing this for our community. We're coming back to our community, and this is for them. I think there's some added weight to this that maybe hasn't been a part of other Super Bowls. You know, they owe this to their community.
Plus, she and Questlove share their favorite shows in halftime history and what they dream to see in halftime future.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
This year's halftime show, Super Bowl 56, has what I consider a dream lineup. Dr. Dre, Kendrick Lamar, Mary J. Blige, Snoop Dogg, Eminem. Dion called it the blackest show in Super Bowl history. It's also a way to honor LA, where this game is being held, in the brand new, beautiful SoFi Stadium.
The most significant thing about the Super Bowl is the fact that it's in Inglewood. When we found out that these were the artists it was what I hoped. When I found out it was SoFi, I was like, oh my God, it would be so amazing if it were like Dre and Snoop. And it was this whole West Coast moment. And, you know, we got the call from Roc Nation that that's who the artists were. And we were thrilled. And I think the full circle moment of, you know, these artists, and, you know, Mary's from New York and Eminem's from Detroit, but Dre, Snoop, and Kendrick came up in really rough parts of Los Angeles, you know, really tough upbringings. They overcame a lot to get where they are. So the full circle moment of kind of imagining them as youth navigating the streets of LA during the times, you know, some of the worst times in this city, to now being on the biggest world stage in their city, you know, I think they all feel a responsibility. Like, we are doing this for our community. We're coming back to our community, and this is for them.
I asked her for a tease of what to expect. She smiled and would only say that Dr. Dre plays a central role in the story.
He is the glue that holds all of this together. You know, Dre was responsible for Snoop. You know, Dre was responsible for Eminem and Kendrick. You know, he had a huge hand in Mary's career and has produced albums for her. So in the way that he's a producer, he is like the artist producer of the Super Bowl.
She hopes the show will go down in history as one of those iconic performances, like U2 in '02, Prince in '07, or Beyonce times two.
When she did Formation, that to me was the blackest moment at a Super Bowl halftime show. And I loved it. I was there for that.
Questlove called it one of the most magical things he's seen on stage. A lot of people say she stole the show from the headliner Coldplay with her tribute to Black culture.
It's interesting because I think Beyonce is really the only artist who could have done that, because she just, I don't know. I don't even know how to explain what I mean by that. But, you know, such a blatant, clear message of just like,
Black Lives Matter.
Pride and resistance and protest. But, you know, there was a world when, you know, a Black woman would definitely be canceled. Like, oh my God, that's angry, that's scary, like, we don't do that, it's all lives, whatever it is. But she was able to perform that message loud and clear, and it resonated to everybody. And I didn't see much negative about it. I mean, some of it could have been that maybe people didn't even understand how truly Black that moment was. Like, that might have been super insider baseball, but we were all like, oh, you know, but it was empowering, especially in that moment of time.
It was a huge moment in Beyonce's career. The Super Bowl has a way of moving the needle for artists, even when they're already household names.
I felt that the Gaga moment was a game changer for her.
And she flew, which you don't see a lot.
The Lady Gaga show was one of my producer Jane's top moments, too.
She's on the top of the roof, and then she comes down, and she's singing and moving and doing acrobatics. She is all over that stage. Then she's at the piano. She stops, says hi to her mom and dad. It is so incredible. It's so aerobic. Her voice sounded good. She did the perfect, you know, medley of her songs. She kind of paid tribute to the league, I thought, in a really great way. And I thought she set that bar so high for everybody coming after her.
For me, that was such a moment for Gaga to prove that that was her moment, in my opinion, to really deliver on the promise of what we wanted her to be. And I almost feel as though that entire moment, that she rose to the occasion and really showed not even America, but the world, as a creative, as an artist, as an A-list celebrity, that she indeed had the goods to deliver. That's just one of those moments that I felt allowed her the leverage to continue to go on.
It's crazy, this surprise element too, because when she starts and she's singing America the Beautiful, you're like, wait, didn't this already happen in the pre-show? Like, what are we doing? Like, this is not what I'm here for.
Right.
No disrespect, not being patriotic, but you're like, and then for her to just dive down and she's hanging, she's flying, she's doing all of these things, I think that surprise element made it hit that much harder.
So Lady Gaga 2017 makes the list of the best. We've covered U2, Diana Ross, Beyonce, Michael Jackson. As for the very best in halftime history, though, we all agreed it's one name.
In the purple rain. I felt that that was probably the first genuine moment that an artist that really didn't fall in line with the unspoken white elephant of quote unquote American values. Like, you know, I would like to think that when they're choosing, you know, you're either choosing someone who's like next to God. Like with Michael Jackson, it's like, that's next to God. With Diana Ross, that's like, well, she's part of the Motown ilk. So, you know, all Motown artists sort of get that pass. So, you know, it's easier. You know, there was a year where, didn't the Blues Brothers once do a year or two? Like, I remember Aykroyd, when Blues Brothers, the sequel came out, I think they were the halftime act. So it's almost like
1997.
Right. So I almost feel as though that Prince was the first time that an artist that clearly his younger self would have given the middle finger to the idea of this sort of amalgamation Americana. And, you know, he's playing ball because it's different than like the Rolling Stones doing it or the year that Paul McCartney did it. You know, Prince is not like, he didn't come to us in American Pie or Next to God format that the Stones and Michael Jackson did. So for him to do it, that was the first time where I finally saw the NFL organization and the Super Bowl sort of coming to our side of the fence. You know, like you have to meet in the middle, and he delivered. Like, that ring was the best thing that ever happened to him. It was like he's magic. Mm-hmm. He's actually magic. Yes, he made this happen.
This is another one of those shows you have to go back and watch. It's pouring rain, and Prince is performing with pyrotechnics, electric guitars, and a full band. When he starts playing Purple Rain, the entire stadium sings along. Can I play this guitar?
Just to see him in that environment, and again, just nighttime, this beautiful curtain blowing in the wind and his shadow on it with his cymbal guitar and the rain. I mean, it was just really, it gives me goosebumps even to this day thinking about it. Every time I see it, every time I hear, like hearing the roar of that room, stadium, it just really, I don't know if you could ever top that, because every single element combined to make that happen.
And in 2007, Dion, it wasn't just raining. We woke up and it was pouring rain, buckets of rain, right? And right before the halftime show was about to start too. As a producer now, how would you have handled that?
I feel like my entire job is like problem, solution, something happens, deal with it, the show must go on. So there's nothing you can do in that moment. I mean, you can't, you know, phone the weather and say, hey, can you stop this for 15 minutes? So you really just have to, you know, there are contingencies. I'm sure they had some contingencies in place. And it's really a game time decision.
And there are a lot of them. What this team does is mind-boggling. The show itself is a precisely produced 12 minutes, made more challenging by the fact that the crew has roughly 5 minutes to set everything up and another five to break everything down.
I mean, literally the moment halftime starts, that exact second, everyone gets out and they start building. And then once everything is done, you'll kind of have lights down that moment. You'll hear the voice, you know, welcome to the Pepsi Super Bowl 56 halftime show. And then, boom, your show starts right there. And I mean, from that last kind of hero shot, you know, you think you're wide shot with all of the bells and whistles. The moment that that's done, that clock starts counting down. And then you're taking everything off in this perfect choreographed routine, and then it's over. And it goes by like a snap. It's crazy. Like, you look up and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe like that just happened.
It's an incredibly complicated dance that hundreds of people spend weeks practicing. This year, Dion's team has constructed the set at a nearby airplane hangar where they're rehearsing every single move by every single person, from stagehand to superstar.
Well, the good thing is that's what rehearsals are for. So in those rehearsals, we will run through everything. We'll stop down. We'll go. We'll stop. Rewind. We'll look. You know what? This camera's great. And you're really planning all of that in advance so that hopefully by game day, you're kind of moving on autopilot.
Dion, in addition to producing one of the biggest Super Bowl halftime shows we've ever seen this year, you also made history last year in 2021 as the first Black woman, the first woman of color to produce a Super Bowl halftime show. And there was so much intentionality across the board with everyone who was hired to bring this to life. Talk to us about that impact, what that means to you.
I mean, you don't even think about it. It's someone just said it in passing last year. And I was like, what? Oh, that's crazy. I had no idea. And, you know, there is just a sense of pride and a sense of responsibility. And we had a lot of women in key roles on the show. And it wasn't even like, we got to get a bunch of women in here. These women are truly the top of their field and the best people to come put this show together, which had so many challenges because of COVID. But Lila Nicole, she was the first Latina department head. She ran wardrobe. She's coming back this year as well. Ez Devlin, who was the creative mind behind the design of the Weeknd's set and is also the creative director for us this year. So it's amazing to have her back. Fatima Robinson, who is a choreographer who's worked on two or three Super Bowls in the past, and she's coming back and joining us. So, you know, another year with a lot of really strong women in key positions.
And this show is made even more special by the fact that Mary J. Blige will be the only female headliner on the stage.
When I think about Mary, there is a Mary J. Blige song for every moment in my life. If I'm happy, if I'm sad, if I'm mad, if I'm frustrated, if I'm in love, if I had a breakup. And I think that she has this voice that people connect with, and she's down to earth. I mean, she's like your girlfriend that you can have drinks with and hang out with. There's no pretenses about her. And for her to be such a huge star and to have sold millions and millions of records and toured the world many times over, all of the awards, has remained grounded and, you know, just continues to inspire the next generation of singers, but is still also out there making music and touring and being the big star that she is. I think in this lineup, she is one of the few women that can stand and hold her own next to these humongous personalities that are around her.
I couldn't let Dion and Questlove go without asking them for their dream halftime lineups. Not that you asked, but Mine would be a nod to 90s female hip hop and rap artists, including Lauryn Hill, Missy Elliott, Lil Kim, Foxy Brown, and TLC.
You know what I would love to see? And it could still happen. And I'm certain that, you know, I think I would love to see kind of a P-Funk, Red Hot Chili Peppers, just a George Clinton kind of led, because he's theatrical and he fits right into it. And I mean, he's a staple, whether America wants it. I mean, he's just as American as apple pie is, you know. And he's I don't even consider him a cult artist. Like what he's done for funk music, which should be acknowledged. Like I feel as though George Clinton, that could be very interesting to see.
I think I would love to see, just for the creativity and theatrics of it, Tyler the Creator and Frank Ocean. That if that is, there's nothing more inside baseball than this pairing. But it would be like the most visually stunning create. I would have to, obviously.
Are you ready? Because you know and I know that if Tyler ever given, if you give Tyler an inch.
But I'm sorry, I did his last two performances, AMAs, where it snowed on him and he rode off in a Vespa. And the BET right. Awards, where he was blown away with debris. I love working with him. Like, I love his team. I feel like if you give him this canvas of this field and say, come up with 13 minutes, I would just be like, what is it? Tell me, I'm ready. Let's do it.
Well, Commissioner Goodell, if you're listening, Tyler the Creator, Frank Ocean, 2023, Dion Harmon as the producer, we're going to put that out in the universe.
Oh, you better believe I will make sure he's listening. He doesn't always love my input over the dinner table, but when I tell him tonight that it came from Dion and Questlove.
Well, I'll tell you what. Those two are the dream lineup for the finale of our first season of the Earning It podcast. A huge thanks to both Dion Harmon and Questlove for being game to take us on a ride through halftime history. Jane, this has been a blast. Thank you for forcing me to this mic and for trusting me with the task of bringing your ideas to life.
Well, Sam, I would say thank you because you're the one who actually brought them to life. I felt like the interviews we got from the biggest names, starting with the commissioner and the head coaches, the Ron Riveras and Sean McDermott and come on, Billie Jean King, you brought them to life because it's the people who know you and trust you who opened up. And I feel like we got terrific interviews because of that. But also people came on the pod who just knew of you and they respected you so much and they trusted you to open up. So thank you for making it such a blast.
And a special shout out to the incredible, badass iHeartMedia team, Sean, Jason, Mike, Julia, Kurt, Grace. Thank you for making us sound amazing all season. Wow. For many reasons, I'm not sure that this season could get any more exciting, but let's go watch some football.
Let's do it.
You go into your shower feeling tired. But as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.